What does it mean to love somebody no matter who they are or who they become? A common pledge couples make to each other is to be faithful in sickness and in health until death do us part. That pledge is put to a major test for couples where one partner changes his or her gender identity. And as we'll hear on today's program, that commitment may or may not endure. I'm Alana Gordon, and on Central Standard today, we'll be joined by one couple who worked through the gender identity transition. We'll explore the personal, logistical, and relationship challenges that go along with the process. We'll also hear stories about relationships that didn't last and what happened next. That's all ahead on Central Standard, after the news. Relationships can be complicated no matter what, but when one partner changes his or her gender, that can add a whole new layer of complexities. This is Central Standard. I'm Alana Gordon, and joining us on today's show are Una and Fiona Nowling, a couple who recently went through this process. They're here to tell us about the challenges and what that's meant for their relationship, not just with each other, but with family, friends, and colleagues. Fiona and Una, thank you for joining us on Central Standard.
Thank you. We're very happy to be here.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Caroline Gibbs, director of the Transgender Institute. Caroline's worked with couples like Fiona and Una through gender transitions. Caroline, thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, we'd like to invite you to join this conversation, too, if you or a loved one has changed their gender identity, and we want to hear how that's affected your life. But first, I want to hear from Fiona and Una. Now, first, how long have the two of you been together?
We've been married for nearly 10 and a half years, and I've known her for 12 years now.
How did you two meet?
Well, we initially met online in a science-based chat room talking about coal and coal jewelry, and she'd had some experience with that growing up in England, and I am a expert in coal combustion at Black & Veatch, so it was a natural interest for me. I had a four-country trip that I was going on to Europe at one point, and one of my stops was England, and Fiona suggested that I come on over and see her to have a break in the time there. And that's when I came out to her and told her, okay, but when we meet in person, while you know me as Una, a woman online and everything, in reality, I'm a transgendered person. And her reaction was, great.
What does that mean? What does that mean to identify as a woman, but then in person be transgender? Like what?
Well, for me, it means that since my very earliest years, I knew that I was different than everyone else. I mostly looked like a boy, but I knew that inside that there was something seriously different. I never felt comfortable around boys or men in general, and I always felt more like a girl and identified with girls, although it was hard to actually be part of their community, especially as you get older, and boys and girls naturally segregate once you get into junior high and high school. As time went on and I left high school, I found out from a physician in my early 20s that I actually have an intersex hormone condition. My body makes a very high level of estrogen naturally and almost no testosterone. And that's a birth defect related condition. They haven't completely diagnosed it. And so I have two things going on. I have a gender identity issue, and I also have a hormonal issue that I've struggled with for my entire life. And both of those combine to make me always feel as if I was female inside and actually hate the male body that I inhabited.
Is that something that you were open about with your family or friends? Were people aware of this as you were growing up?
No, it was my biggest secret that I carefully kept for decades. I did not even really start to come out to people online until about the year 2000 when I was in my mid-30s. And it was just too scary and too terrifying a secret. And for a long time before the internet and access to more information, I felt like I was the only person in the world like this. It was just very terrifying.
What, and you said because you felt like you were the only person in the world like this. What about it was so hard?
I felt very alone. It's a very lonely place to think of yourself as either none of the above or always trapped away from the world that you were intended to be in the first place. And my only exposure to any persons that could be even very loosely called transgendered were people that showed up on daytime talk shows who looked like a linebacker dressed in Victoria's Secret. And I just thought, oh my God, is that what I'm destined to become? You know, I don't feel that way. I feel like a conservative, normal woman inside. And it was scary, and I wondered what it was going to do to my life and how people would react. How would my family react? How would friends react? How would my career turn out? Or would I end my career, essentially, by coming out? So it was a very dark secret that I kept.
So what changed? Why did you decide to come out?
After I met Fiona, and her love changed my life with her total acceptance of me right from the beginning, I had a significant improvement in attitude and feeling about myself. But the feeling or the experience of being transgendered is so overwhelming and so overpowering. It's one of the reasons why such an enormous percentage of our community attempt or succeed in suicide, that even with her support and her unconditional love, the depression that I was suffering from being trapped as Ken in this male body grew and grew over the years. And in addition to that, my cycling hormone levels were also leading to my depression. One of my physicians characterized it as essentially your body has been going through menopause in and out for about 30 years. If you can imagine how that might make you feel on a daily basis, it's pretty awful. Last year, in 2012, the depression greatly accelerated, and in July of 2012, I hit rock bottom, where essentially I woke up one morning and I said, I can't go on like this. I have everything in my life good for me. I have a wonderful wife who I love and loves me. I have a great career. I have a nice house. I have some friends. I can't stand me. I can't die or live out the rest of my days in this shell. And so I had decided that I was going to end it all. Through dithering, I couldn't decide where I was actually going to kill myself. And being over analytical as an engineer, I really couldn't, you know, decide between two places. Finally, I talked myself out of it and went in to see Caroline a week later. And within minutes of hearing my story, Caroline's reaction was essentially, oh my God, we're going to save you.
So essentially, and throughout this, Fiona and Caroline is also here in the studio, but Fiona, your partner, Una's partner, you were witnessing this as well?
Yes, and I had done some research and found some local support groups, and I actually was the one that found Caroline's website, and I said to her, she came home from work one day and she was just devastated. She stayed in the garage and didn't come in. I went down to her and she was in tears and I thought someone had died. And she just said she couldn't go on. I said, you have to go and see Caroline. You have to talk to someone. Someone has to help you. And if she can't help, we'll find you someone else.
And so, Caroline, do you see a lot of this with people as a counselor, with certain relationship challenges and with identity, with gender identity changes? How much is depression and what Fiona and Una are speaking to come into the picture?
It comes into the picture continually. In the Transgender Institute, this is all we do. And people who suffer from what we call gender dysphoria experience what Fiona was describing and what Una was describing, which is a terrible depression. There's often anxiety. And what our job is as therapists is to kind of tease out, if you will, what is in fact this gender dysphoria and what might be genetic depression and what might be other causes. In my practice, what I usually find, because people seek me out already understanding that something is terribly wrong, we work really wholly with people who are transsexual. It's there are many to further more deeply go into your question, there are many, many more transsexual individuals than we ever had an idea. We don't know the statistics. There's no way to count because many people are underground, so to speak, haven't come out. But there are many more than we ever thought.
Just to back up for a minute, mm-hmm. What is transsexual? Is that different from transgender? Is that different from gender identity?
Transgender is what we call an umbrella term. It encompasses transsexualism. It encompasses cross-dressing. It encompasses a term that we call genderqueer. Now, transsexualism is really somebody whose gender identity, and every person on the planet has a gender identity. That simply means, how do I identify? Am I a man, a woman, a boy, or a girl? And for somebody who is transsexual, that means that their body, their literal physical body, does not match their gender identity. And it's a terrible, as you heard Una speak, it's a terrible dilemma to be in, to look in the mirror and see the wrong face and the wrong body. And this is what these individuals go through daily.
How is that linked with sexuality?
It's not linked with sexuality whatsoever. They are two different things entirely. So transsexualism has to do with one's identity, gender identity, as I spoke about. And being gay or lesbian or bisexual has to do with whom one is attracted to erotically and psychologically and emotionally.
So getting back to Fiona and Una, I'm really curious, Fiona, how when you first met Una, what kind of relationship were you looking for? What did you think of, considering now the circumstances, what drew you to Una and what was different at that time, if anything?
We just met as friends, and it was just intended to be a meal between two friends, and we went and we sat and we ate and we talked and we talked and we talked, and eventually we decided we should let the restaurant have the table for someone else, and we went to a cafe and talked even longer, and we just really hit it off great as friends, and I just thought that was going to be it, but when it was time to go, I hugged her goodbye, and I felt as if the universe was heading down one path. And then it hit a bump in the tracks and shifted onto a different track and moved to a different track when I had to goodbye. And I wanted to kiss her then, but I thought that would embarrass her or make her run away in terror, so I didn't.
I was completely clueless about this. I went back to the hotel room in London that night and I said, oh, that was a very pleasant evening. I'd like to do that again. And I was clueless then after until we continued our relationship online and eventually admitted that we loved each other. And as a very strange coincidence, we both first said, I love you, at the same time. And our I love yous in chat actually crossed each other in midstream in the Atlantic Ocean. I actually looked at the chat logs, and both of us had said it simultaneously without even knowing the other had said it. She was the one who later that year ended up proposing to me, because I still, as part of my depression of being trans, I had such a low self-esteem of myself, a low self-esteem of myself in every way, that I thought there was no way that she would ever say yes. And when she finally proposed to me on July 2nd, I turned her down. And I spent 2 days trying to talk her out of it, saying, you really don't understand what you're getting into. I am a transsexual person. I am going to try to deal with this as best as I can and not lose my job and not shake up things and try to keep being Ken, but I don't know if I can keep doing it. And at one point, you're going to be married with a person who looks like a woman, and you're going to be in a lesbian relationship, and your friends and co-workers and family are all going to know that. It says, how can you deal with it? And her reaction after two continuous days was, shut up and marry me.
So just to kind of clarify and understand, at that time, physically or biologically, you were a man?
I have some biological differences I don't want to go into.
Sure.
As part related to my birth defect and intersex conditions. But the short answer is yes.
And you, from the get-start, though, identified with Fiona as being transgender.
Yes.
And so I want to get to a little bit more. You talked about work and other relationships, too, in just a moment. But I wanted to just let listeners know and invite you all to join the conversation. If you're considering a gender transition, or how have you approached this with your partner, friends, or colleagues? Have you found this difficult? We'd love to invite you to join the conversation by calling 816-235-2888 or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Again, you're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Alana Gordon, and our guests are Una and Fiona Nowling and Caroline Gibbs, a counselor at the Transgender Institute. So, Caroline, at what age do you see these sorts of, do you meet with people? What age do you see this sort of coming up, this kind of gender dysphoria, or even the acknowledgement and development of some of the issues that Una's describing?
Across the lifespan, no question about it. We have children 4 and 5 years old, going up to my latest and oldest client is 73. I would say the preponderance of people who show up are in their 30s and 40s. They've suffered, in the way that Una has described, they've suffered for a very long time, hiding, trying to deny, and so forth. And then they finally, it's almost like if you've ever had the experience of holding a beach ball under the pool water, and it won't stay there eventually. It explodes out. And this is precisely what happens to transsexual women and men, is at some point they can't keep this pressure inside any longer. It just will come out. Nothing will stand in the face of this condition because it is hardwired. It is genetic, we believe, possibly with, at times, biological aspects. And it will never change because it's a medical condition.
So for the two of you, Fiona and Una, and I'm just going to let listeners know that you two are sitting near each other holding your hands as we're having this conversation. So this was something for you, Fiona, realizing the complexities and Una's situation. You were okay with this.
Very. I mean, despite her saying that she was trying to talk me out of marrying her for 2 days and saying she was going to try and stay as Ken, she's always been Una to me. I met her as Una, so that's a huge advantage over a lot of couples. But I met her as Una, and I get to see her as her. She's finally how she's meant to be.
How has your family reacted to this? First, Fiona, how did you initially explain this to your family?
My mother's over in England, so it had to be on a phone call, long distance. And she initially reacted poorly, even when I told her I'd known up front about this and hadn't been tricked into it or anything. She said that I was out of my mind and needed my head looking at. But continued to talk to her over a couple of weeks instead of just severing ties. And she's come round, and she's not actually met Una as Una yet, but she's seen pictures and says that she looks very nice.
So she said she's come around.
Yes.
What changed? But there is that kind of initial. How long did that take?
It was a couple of weeks before she started to use the female pronoun and to call Una Una. And once she did that, the relationship got a lot more sound again between the two of them. And she sent jewelry and feminine Christmas presents for Una this year. So,
what's it been like for you and your family? Is this something that, I mean, you talked about earlier, it's been a big secret. So how did you approach this with your family?
I basically told my mother over the phone, and it disseminated to my stepfather that way, and I've met an aunt and uncle and told them in person. The reaction, I would say, was mixed, not nearly as negative as Fiona's mother. My mother essentially became very positive about it when she realized just how unhappy and how depressed and how angry and bitter I'd been in my life, and that there was a cause for this. And she saw that after I started the hormone replacement therapy and had started the counseling with Caroline, that I had the stereotypical religious experience and attitude, that I changed from a moody, angry, depressed person to someone who was smiling and laughing and happy all the time. That's even why I have braces on right now, is for the first time in my life, is because I still have people nudge me at parties and say, "Come on, Una, smile, smile." And I'll say, "I want to. I'm deliriously happy. I'm just not used to smiling. And I wanted to fix my teeth up so that I would have a nice smile to show everybody just how unbelievably happy I am every day."
What is that transition process like? What happens, Caroline?
Just in general, what the transition process is. This is a very unusual couple. Let me start by saying that, because it didn't start out with a lie and it didn't start out with betrayal. So they had a jump start, as Fiona mentioned. The transition process consists of, generally speaking, and rightfully so, getting with a gender therapist, whomever that might be. So that would be the first step. And then you go through a series of processes where the person begins first to accept this condition. I call it a condition on purpose, themselves. They have to come first to a resolution within themselves. And at that point, it is possible then to talk to loved ones. But they have to be at the point of, yes, I accept that I'm a transsexual person. And so we go on from there. And what we like to do is to make our place like a one-stop shop. So we have affiliates who do things with male-to-female transsexuals, for example, like work on their hair, help them work with their makeup, help them work with the feminization of their voices and their wardrobe and so forth.
Does everybody who seeks this out, does it turn out that that person transitions?
The people self-select who come to me. And so generally speaking across the board, I wouldn't know how to answer that and what the stats might be. People know that this is my expertise with the transsexual population instead of just more broadly the transgender population. And so again, they self-select when they come to me.
Well, I want to go to a call. Debbie is calling from Kansas City. Debbie, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I just wanted to call in today. We have a transgender child, and we do see Caroline. She was 4 years old when she told us, and through Caroline's assistance, we have had her transition. She lives full-time as female now, and it has made such a positive impact on her life. But we, as a family, struggled with the idea that she might never find someone to love her and accept her as she is. And when we met Fiona and Una, it was the second life-altering thing that happened to our family. The first was letting our child be who she really is, but the second was finding out that there are people out there who are open-minded, who have such a big heart, that they're going to accept someone however they are. And I'm so proud of them, and just wanted to offer my support to any other parents that are out there and let them know, don't be afraid of this. There are amazing people, and your child can grow up to be happy.
How old is your daughter now?
She is almost six.
And how did she tell you, and how is that, I'm curious, played out in terms of the classroom and in terms of school?
Well, she started telling us that she was a girl. She couldn't go into the bathroom anymore because she was not supposed to be going into the boys' restroom. And she told myself and her dad that, don't you understand, I'm really a girl on the inside. So she was very direct about it. And she was at daycare at the time, and they tried to be very helpful and accommodating, but it's, you know, kind of hard. You've got kids. The kids were pretty accepting. Some of the parents were not. So we were already homeschooling our older child and just decided to bring her home early. And now we are homeschoolers, and we have a new wonderful group of friends who only know her as a female. And then we also have many new friends in the transgender community so that she can see that she's not alone.
Debbie, thanks for your call. What? How would you describe the transgender community? I'm curious from each of you here, kind of, how would you describe that in the Midwest where we are, Caroline?
Yes, well, it hasn't existed, actually. In my practice, I've been doing this for a number of years. I've seen it change enormously within the last few years, so that in Kansas City itself, and many of us have both allies and transsexual people themselves and their spouses, believe that we're in the middle of a real evolution, revolution in the Midwest that's commonly known as a very, very conservative spot, the Bible Belt, if you will. And we call this Transit City, as a matter of fact. That's our little funny epithet for Kansas City, because it is now a more friendly and happy place, truly speaking, for transsexual people.
Have you found that to be the case, Una?
Yes. I was shocked at both the depth and breadth of the trans community when I actually came out, and Caroline directed me to resources and persons in the area that organized events, dinners, parties, and get-togethers. And the community here is this very large sisterhood of very friendly and open and welcoming people who have all had the same shared experience. And generally speaking, the community here, from my research, seems to be much happier and much better adjusted overall, with the exception of, you know, employment is always a problem. It's a continual problem with trans people being either underemployed or unemployed.
Well, we're going to get to a little bit more of that in just a moment, but we're going to take a short break. And like I was saying, when we return, we'll continue our conversation with Una and Fiona Nowling, and we'll take your calls, as we'll also hear from someone who, after changing genders, lost a wife but gained a longtime friend. Central Standard returns in just a moment. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Alana Gordon. We're speaking with Una and Fiona Nowling about their relationship after Una changed genders. And we'll be talking with Caroline Gibbs as well, a counselor at the Transgender Institute. And we want to hear from you. Have you or a loved one undergone a gender transition? How's that affected your relationships? And do you have questions for our guests? You can join the conversation by calling 816-235-2888. Or post to Twitter. We're at KCURCST. And going to now a caller from Overland Park. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm calling on behalf of my daughter and her fiance. He's one of the most macho guys I've ever met. He's like a little Viking. He's an Eagle Scout. He's aggressive. He's a nice guy, but he's aggressive. He's angry. And we were talking one night, and he was explaining to me how he's always felt like a girl. But he's short in stature, so he hasn't wanted to say that out loud, so therefore he's overcompensated. And he's been, you know, a really aggressive kind of guy. Well, now my daughter is pregnant, and he is saying, well, now it's time for me to get my act together and straighten up and be a dad. But I've been listening to what you've been saying, and I'm wondering if this is even an option for him, if he's going to end up being even more angry and more upset as the years go by. And how can I put him in touch with her so that if he wants counseling, he can get it?
Thanks for your call. Without going too much into the specifics of the counseling specifics, I mean, what Caroline here, counselor we have in studio who works a lot with people in these situations, I'm wondering if you can speak to this.
Let me speak to that, yes. Well, first of all, I'm sorry that your kid is in this situation. And it sounds, now I don't know him, obviously, but so that I can't speak in depth to your issue, but it sounds as though that you've nailed it, that there's been some overcompensating going on. This is what happens very frequently. There is no reason whatsoever to want to transition in our society. It is anathema in the society. It is difficult. One loses employment often. One loses one's life often. And I don't want to make that dramatic and extreme for you, and that won't be the case in your situation. But I would say he needs help right away before this goes on too much further.
I wanted to also bring in, when we talked about how it does change lives and how it can change relationships and going through this process, I wanted to bring in Julie Raines of Kansas City to the conversation. We've been hearing also from Fiona and Una, a couple that's gone through this whole process together, and they have come out even stronger together. Julie, I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience. Welcome to Central Standard.
Thanks. My situation, it's similar to a lot of the other girls. I went through my entire life angry and upset and trying to figure out what was going on, and in the middle of a wonderful marriage, I discovered who I was, and I kind of threw everything for a loop. So,
what was that loop?
Well, I'm transgender. That kind of put made things a lot more difficult.
So,
because me and my ex, we had a house, had a good job, wonderful family life. Everything was just perfect, and everything was looking up.
But something wasn't right.
No, something definitely wasn't right. I was one of those who was overcompensating, if you will, trying to prove to the world that I was exactly what they said I was by, joining the Navy, being manly, doing all those things, and I was never quite good at any of that. So, yeah, it made things difficult.
And so you made this transition, and you talked with your partner at the time. What happened?
Well, in 2010, I becoming angry again, and in order to help me try to figure out what was going on, I decided to write a book. So I started researching topics that would help me get everything out. And I ended up running across some videos on YouTube made by people in the transgender community. And this one gal came on and she was talking about gender and sexuality and all these, everything that has to do with our, who we are. And she said something to me that just gave me a moment of clarity, and that was that gender and sexuality are two different things. And as soon as I heard that, I just shut everything off, and I said, oh, my God, I'm transgender.
So what happened when you talked with your partner? How did that affect your relationship? What happened?
Well, we talked at length. And I asked her, could you love a woman? And her answer was, I just don't know. We loved each other deeply. We had loved each other for 3 decades. We were very, very close. We were best friends for years. And ultimately what happened was we figured out that she was indeed a straight woman. And as soon as I started taking hormones to fix the problems in my life, that pushed her away. All of a sudden, her body was reacting to my chemistry, and she, you know, she recognized that I was indeed female, and that put the kibosh on any kind of intimacy or being close or maintaining a close relationship with this woman as a married couple.
Do you still have any sort of relationship?
Actually, I do. We have always been and always will be best friends. And what we did is we ended up changing the nature of the relationship so that we could, you know, save the friendship. And today we are sisters. We're still family. She kept my last name because that is quite honestly who she is, and that's who I am. So, yeah, even though we lost the marriage, we remained close as friends. So it's not exactly a success story, but it is an example of where you can go if you take the other person's desires, wants, needs, and feelings into consideration.
So, Caroline, thank you, Julie, for sharing your story. Caroline, I'm curious some of the different ways that and experiences that you see of people when they do transition and how that affects, on the one hand, their most intimate relationships.
Absolutely. Well, there are some interventions that we do that Julie alluded to, and one of them is to administer hormones. In the case of male-to-female transsexuals, we administer estrogen. That is, the endocrinologist does that. And also anti-androgens, which stop the production of testosterone. So that's one of the steps that we take. And what can often happen at that point is then the person, what does happen is that the person starts to transform physically. And it's often at that point that the spouse starts to get it, that this is a real thing. This is going to happen. I'm actually going to be identified and self-identified by extension as a lesbian. And my experience is that's where people get most hung up, where spouses of transsexual people have the most trouble. They feel guilt. They feel loneliness. They feel loss. They feel anger. They feel all those things as well. So it's very, very tough going for the spouse of a transsexual person in general. It's a huge struggle for most people. Una and Fiona, Julie and her ex-spouse are really unusual. I don't know the stats. Again, there's no way we could. But I know within the MTF community, male-to-female community, it's rather high, and it's what I see in my practice, that people will split apart, that the spouse simply cannot identify as a lesbian. And that's the sticking point. Now, if we talk about the other direction, which would be the female-to-male,
so that would be
the female-bodied person who identifies as a boy or a man. The little study that we've done about that indicates that they, in general, have less trouble sticking it out. We don't know why that might be, but it seems to be that the male-to-female and their spouse have more trouble. We can make some conjectures about what that might be, but we truly don't know.
Well, you're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Alana Gordon. Our guests are Una and Fiona Nowling, Caroline Gibbs with the Transgender Institute. We're also joined by the phone by Julie Rains. One of the things that we haven't gotten to, and we also want to hear from you, if you would like to join this conversation, by calling 816-235-2888 or emailing us at centralstandard@kcur.org. And what I was going to say is one of the things that we've alluded to a lot has to do with, we've talked a lot about the intimate relationships in some of the family, but what about outside of that? What about at work? What happened, Una, for you? Did that change your work situation? And you talked about earlier that you were really worried about this.
Yes, I was, because I have for 20 years been working at Black & Veatch, the greatest engineering firm in the world. And I love my career. I love the work I do there. And I genuinely enjoy working with my coworkers. And I was terrified that in coming out to them as this, I might lose everything all at once. I'm also an adjunct professor of mechanical engineering at UMKC, but the university didn't have any problem. I was more concerned about Black & Veatch because they traditionally you expect to have problems at work. What I did was a process of coming out to my coworkers one at a time and talking to them, laying my cards on the table, telling them a bit about my story and sharing some medical history and explaining to them what was going on. And my coworkers were just absolutely fantastic. Every one of them rose to the occasion and said, "We care about you. We support you. What can we do to help you out? And what can we do to make this successful for you?" My administrative assistant, Deborah, she's basically like a second mom to me and has taken care of me and watched out for me, gives me clothing advice every single day. And everyone there has really been wonderful for my transition process.
Julie, what about for you?
Well, similar, except that my transition was a more of a stealth move. I spoke with my HR department, and after some careful consideration, the company I work for is a little more spread out. We have multiple locations around the country, and what we ended up doing is when I was ready, they transferred me to another store where nobody knew me, and if anybody did remember who I was, they were asked not to talk about my situation because we just didn't want the headache of dealing with people who just didn't understand or were or could potentially be angered by the fact that there was a transgender individual running the show.
Were you okay with that?
Oh, yeah. It worked out just fine. Ultimately, all I really want to do is be accepted as one of the girls, you know? I don't want much out of life. I just want to be accepted for who I am. And quite frankly, that is a woman.
Caroline, what you work with a lot of people and you hear a lot of stories about this. What are some challenges, things for people to take into account in approaching a work situation?
What we like to do, just in direct answer to that question, is we like to go on the job when it's appropriate from our organization, and we like to train individuals. And we start with HR, we get permission, we build the training, and then we go in and we simply educate, first off, the people that work most closely with the individual who's transitioning, and then we spread it out to the larger community. So we've worked with hospitals, agencies, and so forth, and I am seeing more acceptance.
For situations, for places where you're not there on the workplace for whatever reason, and so How do people address this? What have been some of the issues that have come up?
Well, for in response to that question, I want to reiterate that things are getting better on that front. However, there are problems that come up. There's bias. I mean, our culture is biased against transsexual people, so that same bias will show up in the workplace. I have had individuals in my time as a therapist who lost their jobs. That's not as possible without a lawsuit impending for companies to do now. And so companies are more and more falling in line with the proper way to treat people with equality and dignity.
So as somebody, I mean, how does somebody approach their workplace? What's the approach?
The thing that I suggest and that we suggest in the organization is that people go right to HR and absolutely come out to HR and ask for confidentiality. That's not always possible, but for a period of time for confidentiality. And then, and to get a kind of an idea, where does this company stand on this issue? I also counsel people to look at the EEOC for the company, and is gender identity included in that? It is not typically, although again, we're moving along in that regard. If sexual orientation is included as a protective aspect, that's a good sign. That means that the company has at least some opening to diversity. And so oftentimes I have seen companies actually add gender identity to a protected status within the company. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that's happened at Black & Veatch with Una.
Yes, it did.
I want to go to a caller here from Lawrence. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, what's your name?
Clavin.
Clavin, thanks for calling into Central Standard.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And what question or comment do you have?
Well, I wanted to call in. I hadn't heard any female to male on the program yet, and so I just wanted to call in and share my experience a little bit. I was born into a female body and transitioned and became a man in my 20s. I was a student at the university at the time and had a little bit of difficulty because the professors, of course, just had a roster with names on it, and my name at the time was legally a female name. But in general, I was able to connect pretty well to professionals that could help me out. I definitely want to thank Caroline for the work that she does. It's important work for a segment of the population that doesn't always get immediate service. It's just not visible. But I feel like Lawrence is a little more relaxed and accepting in terms of gender identity than some other places. And just this past year, the city commission has included gender identity and expression in the public relations clause as a there was an anti-discrimination clause that's included in our public relations code. And that was through the work of the Kansas Equality Coalition. So Lawrence is moving forward quite a bit, I think, in terms of acceptance.
So while we're on the broader topic of relationships, how did this affect your relationship with your family? And maybe, I don't know, if you have had a partner through this?
Well, my relationship with my family was a little bit difficult. I was raised in a Mormon home, so it was religiously very conservative. And my parents had a really hard time learning to accept it, but have, in more recent years, come around. I'm 34 now, and I began transition when I was 23. So there's been a lot of time to process it, and there have been ups and downs with my parents, but we're things have been improving pretty steadily. And it's been really across the board. I have a number of brothers and sisters, and there's a brother who's always supported me that's older than I am, and then I have a younger brother that has only very recently started texting me a little bit. But, I mean, this is after a decade of no contact at all.
Wow. Clavin, thank you for calling in. I want to go to Susan now, who's also called. Susan, hello.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just had an observation. I went to visit a friend in a nursing home setting for a long time, I mean over a period of years, and one of the patients in the nursing home was someone who was transgendered. And I felt very awkward in that a lot of conversation and gossip and things were there. And I just thought, oh, I wonder what kind of a support system she has. So I'm glad to hear that there are people. But what could I have done besides I always called her by name whenever I saw her? I would smile and talk with her. But we didn't get to be friends or anything. I didn't know her well enough to do that. But she would greet me, too, as soon as she saw me. So what could I have done that would have been really supportive, especially in conversation with other patients?
Yeah, Caroline.
Oh, I'd love to speak to that. It sounds as though you did a great job. I think just in general, if you address someone by their correct and chosen pronouns and you use their correct and chosen name, that's the very best thing that you can ever do, because it's showing that you are accepting that person at the deepest level of who they are, which is their gender identity. And so it sounds as though you did a good job.
Una, Fiona, any final words of advice?
I have been blessed in that I had a wonderful woman who accepted me fully for who I was right from the beginning. I had a wonderful company and coworkers who made my continuing career possible, and friends and family who have accepted me. My situation is atypical, but I hope with all my heart that my situation very soon becomes normal for people like me.
I've been best as well, because Una simply is wonderful, and I've always known her as Una, which is unusual. But there is in the local community a support group for the significant others or friends or family. The community isn't just for the transgender people. There is a support group called SOFA, and Caroline can give people details on that, or you can find it online.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And Julie, real quick.
Take slow, don't jump the gun. Take things through, and just know who you are before you do anything.
Thank you. Well, our guests today were Una and Fiona Nowling, Caroline Gibbs, a counselor at the Transgender Institute. We're also joined by phone, as we just heard, from Julie Raines. Thank you all for joining us on Central Standard.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page of kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow as we explore the history of streets and neighborhoods and how they get their names. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with Suzanne Hogan. Our intern is Claire McInerney. Our announcer is Kim Noble. Bill Anderson is our executive producer. I'm Alana Gordon, and Up to Date is next with their Writers Roundtable. This is Central Standard.